I want to talk, I want to go back and see if any of these folks were held accountable, but then looking forward with the VA Mission Act and where we are on that. But talk about the VA Mission Act and what it did once it was passed and signed into law by President Trump.
President Trump recognized early on that there were a lot of problems with the VA. And whatever anyone thinks about President Trump, you go back and you look at his campaign speeches from 2016, and almost every one he brought up the problems of the VA and talked about the need for healthcare choice. So when he came into office in 2017, this was one of his top priorities. First, he passed the VA Accountability Act in 2017, which we can talk a little bit more about if you'd like. But the most important and impactful piece of legislation in regards to veterans was the VA Mission Act. And this was a piece of legislation that came together over almost a year.
Americans are capable of achieving extraordinary things when they have the freedom and opportunity to do so. This is American Potential. And here's your host, Jeff Crank.
All right, thanks for being with us for another episode of American Potential. You know, when America's patriots join the military, they may be driven by a sense of duty or looking for the next step in life. And they commit themselves to serve and protect America, often spending time away from their loved ones, facing the risk of injury, or even making the ultimate sacrifice. Now, in return, these men and women should be provided the support and services they deserve. One aspect of this support is medical services offered through the Veterans Affairs system. However, a decade ago, it was revealed that veterans were being denied care through a hidden system designed to manipulate performance metrics, ensuring bonuses for VA staff at the expense of veterans' lives. Now, this was called the Phoenix VA scandal. As a result of this scandal, concerned Veterans for America helped get the VA Mission Act passed, which allows veterans access to healthcare services that have a shorter wait time or are closer to them than a VA facility. Today's guest worked for an Arizona congressman during this time and was hearing about the struggles veterans were having. I want to welcome Marine Corps Iraq veteran and former executive director and senior advisor for Concerned Veterans for America, Dan Caldwell. Dan, thanks for being with us.
Jeff, thank you for having me on.
Yeah, so I think that many people know about the Phoenix VA scandal, but I think if you could, for those who might not know about it, it was a decade ago. Hard to believe time has flown by so quickly. Tell folks what that VA scandal was all about.
Sure. So 10 years ago, a whistleblower with the Phoenix VA, Dr. Sam Foote, came forward with evidence that the VA in Phoenix was using secret wait lists to cover up the true amount of time it took for veterans to get care. And as a result of these secret wait lists, 40 veterans died waiting for care. And eventually, it was revealed that the use of secret wait lists was widespread across the VA. Up to two-thirds of VA hospitals were using secret wait lists to cover up the amount of time it took for veterans to get care and to, as you alluded to in your intro, to ensure that VA managers got performance bonuses because they were perceived to and not actually meeting their metrics. And this revealed widespread systemic misconduct and problems of veterans getting health care in a timely manner. And so after it was first reported in the Arizona Republic, and then CNN did a follow-up story, there were congressional investigations. President Obama's VA secretary at the time, VA Shinseki, was forced to resign. You had several key leaders in the VA headquarters resign, and many senior leaders across the country within the VA resigned as well, too. And this started the momentum for the passage of several reform bills under the Trump administration that were designed to address the problems that were revealed by the Phoenix VA waitlist scandal. I think it is worth taking a minute to step back, though, and kind of get to how this began and why it began. So after the beginning of the war on terror after 9/11, the VA received a significant amount of resources. Between 2001 and 2014, its budget more than doubled. And it far outpaced the budget growth far outpaced the growth in patients into the VA. And so this wasn't a budget problem. The VA was getting a significant amount of resources from Congress. You had this dynamic in Congress where the Democrats would put out a VA budget and then the Republicans would say, well, we want to do more for our veterans, so we're going to give them more money. And the Democrats would then say, oh, yeah, well, we're going to give them more money. So Congress and presidents of both parties dumped a tremendous amount of resources into the VA, and they grew substantially, even though the overall veteran population was shrinking at the time. Even with the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, you weren't seeing growth in the veteran population overall, and you weren't seeing a significant growth in the number of veterans entering the system over time. And in fact, most of the veterans that were entering the system were actually not Iraq and Afghanistan veterans. They were either Vietnam-era veterans or veterans that served in the Cold War in the 90s who had expanded access due to change in eligibility laws. So you get to the 2009-2010 period, and the Obama administration put out these wait time metrics for the VA healthcare system that were really low. The problem was is the VA was so inefficient, it was so bureaucratic that most hospitals could not meet those standards. So instead of owning that and proposing fixes to the VA healthcare system, many managers across the VA started to create these secret wait lists. And that was to hide the true amount of time it took for veterans to get care. And as I said earlier, so they could get their performance bonuses. And many of them were doing this knowing that they actually couldn't get fired for these actions, that it was nearly impossible to fire a VA employee. So they knew it was almost impossible that if they got caught, for them to get removed from their position, or even in some cases tried criminally for what in some cases was criminal misconduct. So that's why in 2013, the year before the VA scandal broke wide open, you didn't have one senior manager, one SES employer, senior executive service employee across the VA get a negative performance review. So it was that lack of accountability, that bureaucratic red tape that encompassed all the VA, and the fact that the VA, in essence, had a captive market because veterans who were using the VA, they didn't have healthcare choice. They couldn't take their VA benefits, their healthcare benefits outside of the system. So there's no competition. So therefore, there was no incentive for the VA to do better in many cases. So that's how you got to where we were in April 2014. We had this massive scandal that unfortunately revealed that dozens, if not hundreds of veterans across the country died waiting for care because of the use of secret wait lists and this widespread misconduct.
Yeah, it's heinous. That's what's so heinous about it to me is the fact that this was all done for you know, self-interest, bureaucratic self-interest at the expense of veterans who didn't get the care that they needed. And as you talked, lives were lost because of that. You talked about the very key component of this, and we see this in a lot of areas of government, is lack of competition. This kind of abuse can happen when you have lack of competition. We talk about it in public schools in K-12 and, you know, providing different alternatives and how that opens up a free market and what that will do. But that's really been the case with veterans healthcare as well. If it's all controlled by the VA and the VA is intending to control it to themselves and not have others go out and help, you know, how do you ever get a system to get fixed or get better if there is no other alternative?
I think you bring up a very good parallel with the school choice debate, is that the VA healthcare system knew that it didn't have competition, that they knew that the veterans within the system didn't really have any choice but to use their healthcare that they provided through their government-run healthcare hospitals or medical centers. So there was no incentive for them provided through competition to improve. Now, what's interesting is that the VA's GI Bill, which I used when I left the Marine Corps to finish up college, you don't have to go to a VA university. You don't have to go to a VA-run technical school. You can take your benefits to a public or private university. If you go to certain private universities, you might have to pay a little bit out of pocket, but there was choice. And in fact, what you saw is when they rolled out the post-9/11 GI Bill, is you saw this dynamic where a lot of schools started to compete with each other for veterans as they try to become more veteran-friendly schools. They created Veteran Services Center. They created special programs for veterans to help catch up on, you know, math or other areas where maybe they didn't focus on during a military service. So you actually had an example of choice and competition working well within a VA benefit program. And you could also say the same thing about the VA home loan program, but you didn't see that in their medical services program. And there's a larger reason for that I think we need to be honest about too, is that there are a lot of people, mainly on the progressive left, that viewed the VA healthcare system as a model healthcare system, not just for veterans, but for all Americans, that they wanted to move to that universal top-down, single-payer, single-provider, universal healthcare, whatever you want to call it. And so they saw that as the model that they wanted to move the rest of the healthcare system to. So unfortunately, that introduced a political element to it, particularly under the Obama administration, where you had during this time a big debate around the implementation of Obamacare about if they conceded that this top-down system didn't work, were they conceding that their broader ideas about healthcare weren't working as well too? And so that's why the debate became unfortunately more intense and probably more partisan than it needed to be.
Yeah. And it's talking about trapping veterans in that system in order to prove their political point that system was somehow serving the interest of veterans, when in fact it wasn't. And that's one of the reasons, and we can talk more about this later, but the VA Mission Act and why Concerned Veterans for America, for instance, lobbied so hard for that, right, is to make sure that there is choice so that veterans can choose. If they want to choose a VA facility, that's their choice. They can do that. But if they want to choose community care elsewhere, they could do that too. But that's really the crux of this, right, is once somebody gets trapped into a system, the system becomes about protecting the system rather than serving the patients or serving their customer, if you will.
Exactly. We said at the time, and I believe Concerned Veterans for America still says this to this day, is that the VA was putting the VA bureaucrats first, not the veteran. Right. And it's not surprising because that's where the incentives were. Is that the incentives within the system at the time were for senior VA leaders to protect themselves and to ensure that they could get their bonuses. And the incentives were not to improve the system, or to make it better for veterans, to deliver higher quality care or more timely care. It was essentially to preserve the system as is and the positions of the senior leaders within it.
Yeah. So now during this VA scandal, you were working with Congressman David Schweikert from Arizona, and you heard about some of these stories that veterans were having. Share some of those stories. I mean, what were you hearing, some of the issues?
So I started working for Congressman Schweikert middle to end of 2011, and I started working on veteran constituent casework in his district office. And eventually my role kind of grew over time, but I always had that as part of my portfolio. And for the first couple of years I was there, and really up, I would say actually up until the end, the whole time I was there, our number one case work request had to do with either veterans benefits or the delayed care at the Phoenix VA hospital. And it wasn't just delayed care in the sense that, I can't get an appointment for 6 months. That was pretty common. Another big issue they had was that they did have these contracted private care providers at the time. I want to be clear, that's not the same as choice, because veterans didn't have a choice to use these people. The VA would just send them to to these contracted providers at their own discretion. It was still ultimately a VA decision, not a veteran decision, so you didn't have that competition in play. And in a lot of cases, those contractors weren't getting paid. And so we got more and more of those pieces of casework on the VA benefits, mainly on the disability and compensation side. Veterans were often waiting 12 to 24 months to get their VA disability claims adjudicated after they left the service. There were a couple Purple Heart recipients that came into our office that had spent, in some cases, over a year recuperating at places like Walter Reed Medical Center, and they were supposed to go on the VA disability system, and they had gaps in when they were starting to receive their VA disabilities from when they went off the military's pay system. And so these guys who had suffered, in some cases, grievous wounds were are in a position where they're unable to pay their rent or pay for accommodation. So our office had to come in and deal with that and advocate for our constituents. So we saw this between 2011 and 2013. At the end of 2013, I left the congressman's office, and that's when I went to go work for Concerned Veterans for America. And CVA at the time, by the time I joined, had already identified this as a major issue within the veteran community, is that the VA was not providing timely care or benefits, and they already were coming up with ideas to fix it. So by the time the Arizona Republic, my hometown newspaper, and then CNN broke the story, CVA had already been raising alarm about these issues. And then the fact that this came out, that they were using secret waitlists, we had a set of solutions that could help fix this problem. And from there, that's when we really shifted into the advocacy policy development mode.
Yeah. Well, and you talk about that advocacy and policy development. Because of the scandal, first of all, the Choice Act was came to be, and then 4 years later, the VA Mission Act was passed.
Yep.
What are the differences between those two? And love to hear CVA's involvement in that and pushing that forward.
Sure. So in 2014, in response to the VA waitlist scandal, Congress passed a bill that was designed to do two things. One, it was designed to make it easier to fire senior executives within the VA, and also to provide a limited amount of healthcare choice to a certain set of veterans that were 40 miles away from a VA hospital or that were on a wait list for 30 days. And I want to be clear that this was not a bill that Congress at the time, which you had the Senate controlled by Democrats, the House controlled by Republicans, and you had President Obama in charge. Congress didn't want to pass this bill, but the scandal was so bad and the drumbeat for change was so loud that they didn't really have a choice. Most members of Congress, including many Democrats at the time, rejected the idea that this was a money problem. Because as I pointed out earlier, the VA had gotten its budget more than doubled in the prior 12 years. They'd gotten a significant number of new employees. More and more money getting dumped in the system wasn't going to solve the systemic issues. So that bill passing under those political conditions was a major win. And I think that had you not had a VA scandal at the scale that you had, a bill like that would have never passed because of the partisan nature of the discussion around healthcare at the time. Now, the VA Choice Act was, again, pretty revolutionary for its time, but there was one problem, and that was that the Obama administration didn't really want to implement it. And so they, for their next 2 years that they were in office, undermined it and improperly implemented it, and they actually wouldn't defend lawsuits against the part that made it easier to fire senior executives. They actually sided with the public sector union, the American Federation of Government Employees. And so that's why, even though it was a really revolutionary, it wasn't a perfect bill, but it was still a revolutionary piece of legislation for the VA, why it ultimately didn't have the impact that a lot of people hoped it had. And that's where we got to the Trump administration with the VA Accountability Act and the VA Mission Act.
Yeah. Well, and let's talk about the VA Mission Act. And I want to talk, I want to go back and see if any of these folks were held accountable, but then looking forward with the VA Mission Act and where we are on that. But talk about the VA Mission Act and what it did once it was passed and signed into law by President Trump.
So President Trump recognized early on that there were a lot of problems with the VA. And whatever anyone thinks about President Trump, you go back and you look at his campaign speeches from 2016, and almost every one he brought up the problems of the VA and talked about the need for healthcare choice. So when he came into office in 2017, this was one of his top priorities. First, he passed the VA Accountability Act in 2017, which we can talk a little bit more about if you like. But the most important and impactful piece of legislation in regards to veterans was the VA Mission Act. And this was a piece of legislation that came came together over almost a year. And there were elements within the VA and even within President Trump's administration that fought it, mainly his first VA secretary, Secretary Shulkin. They didn't want it because Secretary Shulkin, unfortunately, was captured by the VA bureaucracy. President Trump fired him, put in somebody new. And then at that point, really created the conditions within Congress, along with advocacy from Concerned Veterans for America, Partners Americans for Prosperity, and several other groups, to bring together this truly transformational bill, the VA Mission Act. What the VA Mission Act did was is that it fundamentally changed how veterans access healthcare for the VA. It removed a lot of the arbitrary wait time and distance standards in the VA Choice Act. It had more reasonable standards that veterans could access care based on like where they live, actual, you know, traffic and distance to get to a healthcare center instead of miles to use minutes. And it also created an urgent care system that veterans could access at any time. So it opened the aperture extremely wide for veterans to access healthcare through the VA. But most importantly is that it integrated the VA with private sector healthcare networks. So you created a truly blended system where the VA isn't walled off from the VA from private care providers in their areas. So you had these private care networks created across the country, and veterans could more easily access private care if that was what was best for them. Now, it didn't go all the way to where we wanted to go, which is full choice, but it was a huge step. And particularly with the introduction of those urgent care clinics and the private care networks, is it put the system, it put the VA on a path to where it now actually had to compete for veterans, and that veterans had more options and were less likely to get trapped in the VA system. And I think even though the VA has a long way to go, the VA Mission Act truly transformed the VA in a way that you hadn't seen since really the end of World War II, and has put it in a much better position. Again, as I said, the VA still has some problems. It still needs to improve in several areas. But the VA we're dealing with today is not the VA we're dealing with in 2014, and that is because of the VA Mission Act and the VA Accountability Act passed during the Trump administration.
So what good reason does the VA have, other than protecting their own and the system, to limiting the choice of veterans? Why wouldn't, I mean, it just seems logical that anybody who cares for veterans would say, well, veterans should have a choice of where they get their care. But what logical explanation do they give other than the obvious, which is they're just trying to protect their own system?
Well, logic and bureaucracy often don't go together, but I will give you some of the reasons that they give. I don't agree with them. In fact, some of them make me kind of angry. One reason they give is that veterans aren't smart enough to manage their own healthcare. This is literally what they say, is that the private healthcare system is too confusing. And, you know, veterans that we trust to make life or death decisions that could have major implications for national security aren't smart enough to be able to evaluate a private sector doctor or know when to access an urgent care facility. That is the biggest argument they use. They talk about concerns around coordination of care and like education on healthcare quality and things like that. But that's something you hear from the VA, and unfortunately, even from some veteran service organizations, that essentially you can't trust a guy that you trusted to drive a $4 million tank in combat to manage their own healthcare. And that's one of the biggest excuses they use. And candidly, it really angers me when I hear that. Some of the other reasons they give is that VA healthcare is actually cheaper than the private sector. That, in many cases, is not necessarily true. That the VA is really the only healthcare system that can deal with injuries that are related to combat and war and military service. Look, there are some areas the VA specializes in that I think in a competitive market, because of their comparative advantage, that they thrive at. The reality is that the private sector deals with things like amputations on a pretty common basis. They deal with burns on a pretty common basis. These are not things that are alien to the private sector healthcare system. In fact, there's really only a few thousand amputees within the VA system. The private sector healthcare system deals with significantly more amputees than the VA does. And so I think that's one of the big myths that they use to justify shutting off access to private healthcare and is shutting off veterans' healthcare choice. And again, I just don't think it stands up to scrutiny.
Yeah. Well, and it seems, I made the comparison to K through 12 education before. That's sort of the same arguments that they use to keep kids trapped in systems is sometimes, well, the parents don't understand or they're not quote unquote smart enough to make the decision, which, it's insulting. Right? Nope. And it's insulting to say that veterans shouldn't be able to make this decision. Is the VA been able to fix some of the issues of wait times and what's happened since the Phoenix VA scandal?
I think in some cases, yes. I think that I just have to say my personal experience, and I don't want to project that on every veteran, is that the VA has become more responsive. It's easier to schedule appointments. You have more options. And in many cases, you are able to access healthcare more quickly. But as Concerned Veterans for America has continued to document, there are still significant wait times in part of the country, parts of the country. But you also have a bigger problem right now, is that the Biden administration, just like the Obama administration, is uncomfortable with this idea of healthcare choice. Now, in a lot of ways, they have no choice but to accept it, because this is now baked into the system because of the VA Mission Act. And if they try to reverse it too much, it would cause way too much disruption in veterans' healthcare. So what they're trying to do is nibble around the edges and make it harder for veterans to access care in the private sector. They also, just like the Obama administration, aren't defending the VA accountability laws in court. And they're trying to undermine those at the behest of the public sector unions. The other big issue right now within the VA is that part of the VA Mission Act was the VA was supposed to perform what is called an asset infrastructure review, where they were going to assess all their hospitals, all their medical clinics, and see if they were still needed, if they needed to shrink, expand, or be sold off. And then veterans in that area would access care through contracted providers. This is basically to ensure that the VA's medical center footprint was aligned with the veteran population of today. Because one of the problems with the VA healthcare system is that I believe nearly 60% of its current buildings and hospitals were built immediately after World War II, when the veteran population was larger and it was more concentrated in certain parts of the country, like the Northeast and Midwest, where there's actually less density of veterans, since many of them, like many Americans, move south to states like Florida, my home state of Arizona, Texas, and so on. And this was to help ensure that the VA had the right assets in the right place to best serve veterans. Unfortunately, you had a number of senators led by Senator Joe Manchin who stopped that from happening because they didn't want their VA healthcare system in their state or in their district shut down or downsize. They prioritize what they viewed as their own political interests, mainly serving public sector unions who are big contributors to certain political campaigns over what is best for veterans. And the reality is that in a lot of cases, this wouldn't have led to less jobs in their district because there was still a need for these medical providers, as a lot of them would have gone to the private sector. It's unlikely that the buildings would have sat dormant for a long time. This was mainly about protecting certain types of jobs, and that was government jobs that also are required to join public sector unions and therefore pay the dues of these unions, which frees up money for these unions to give to political campaigns. So unfortunately, the politicization of this issue led to a group of senators undermining good reform. And I think that puts the VA in an awkward position going forward because they can't properly serve veterans with their current medical center footprint. So they got to realign it.
Right. As you look at this, one other thing that they're doing, as I understand, maybe you can explain a little bit of this too, is they were by law supposed to put up a website which told people about the Mission Act and how veterans could get care, community care, if that's what they chose to do. And I think they've kind of hijacked that as well, as I understand it. And now that website, instead of telling veterans about their options, really tells them about how great the VA system is. Is that still going on?
I believe so. So this ties into another problem with the VA. So I think there were three key problems within the VA healthcare system that were revealed in the 2014 VA waitlist scandal. The lack of accountability for their employees, a lack of choice for veterans, and an overall lack of transparency. And this issue goes in the third bucket, the lack of transparency. Is the VA was not transparent about how well its healthcare system was doing in terms of wait times and quality compared to the private sector. They'd always say, oh, we have higher quality than the private sector, and they'd point to one or two metrics, but they weren't measuring quality the same way. They weren't measuring wait times in some cases the same way. So it was very difficult for veterans to truly understand how the VA was performing. And the reality is that veterans knew that they'd be better equipped to make better choices in terms of where they get their health care. And it also, too, would be more difficult to hold VA leaders accountable. So that transparency aspect is something that enables a more effective usage of the other two things, accountability and choice. So it's not surprising that in the new administration, which is already uncomfortable with this, is that they would undermine this. My new administration mean the Biden administration. So that was incredibly disappointing. And I think, look, across the government, there's a lack of transparency. But in this case, it's particularly egregious because this is an agency that candidly has a long history of misconduct and not providing the proper care for veterans. And transparency, sunlight, is the best disinfectant for government bureaucracies that are out of control and have systemic misconduct.
Yeah. Have any of these folks that were involved in the Phoenix VA scandal, was anyone held accountable, or did they all just kind of get promoted and get their bonuses?
Well, you had Sharon Hellman, who was the head of the Phoenix VA hospital. She was ultimately fired, and I believe she was convicted of a felony. But the felony had nothing to do with the VA wait lists. It had to do with the fact that she legally accepted, and I'm not making this up, she illegally accepted Beyonce tickets from a lobbyist or some type of federal contractor. The chief of staff and some other folks at the Phoenix VA hospital were fired, but it took nearly 2 years to fire them because of how onerous the VA's termination process was for even senior level executives. You did have a lot of SES employees moved out of their roles. A lot of them were moved to positions that didn't have much responsibility. VA Secretary Eric Shinseki did resign. The head of the VA healthcare system overall at the time also resigned or was fired. So there were a handful of people held accountable, but to be very honest, there weren't enough. And there weren't enough people held criminally accountable, because at the end of the day, this misconduct clearly did lead to the deaths of veterans. And in many cases, it led to worse health outcomes for veterans. I don't use this term lightly, but I think you could argue that in many cases, this was negligent homicide. And not enough people were held accountable for that. And that is a lingering disappointment for me 10 years after the scandal.
Yeah. Well, it's been an incredible movement. I mean, if you think about it, it's taken a decade, but it's been incredible movement with the passage of the Mission Act and so many other accountability measures on the VA. You've done great work. I think the Concerned Veterans for America and many other veterans organizations have done great work on that. And credit to President Trump for really making that an issue in his administration and signing the Mission Act into law. But there's a lot more work to be done to hold veterans, the Veterans Administration accountable.
I agree. And I think this was one of President Trump's greatest policy accomplishments. And I just want to be clear, you know, the Concerned Veterans for America team played a key role in this. Americans for Prosperity was a great partner. And they played a key role in this as well, too, along with a lot of allies within the Trump administration, not just President Trump himself, but you had people like Darren Selnick, who was CBS senior advisor. He went into the Trump administration. He played a key role. A lot of folks across the administration made sure this happened. And when there were people impeding this in the administration, they were fired. And that was a good thing. And so it was a major effort, and a lot of people prioritized this and made it a key issue. And without all of that, without the grassroots support, without the policymaker support, without support of key people within the Trump administration, it would have never happened.
So if folks want to get involved and, you know, take this to the next level and help do advocacy for veterans' health care moving forward beyond the Mission Act, how would they go about doing that? Tell us a little bit more about CVA.
Well, I know that my former colleagues at Concerned Veterans for America are still doing great work on this. You can go to their website at www.cv4a.org. I still follow them. I still take action through their action center that they have on their website. You'd also follow them on Twitter at Concerned Vets. Again, they're doing a lot of great work, not just on veterans' health care, but on foreign policy, on spending, and other issues as well, too. So please check them out. And they have a lot of ways for you to get involved, whether it's online or if you are in a state where they have a field chapter for you to get involved in some of their field app. So again, go to their website, www.cv4a.org, or find them on Twitter and Facebook.
All right, Dan. Well, listen, thanks first of all, for your service to our country as a veteran yourself, but also for the great work that you've done in helping get better quality health care access for our nation's veterans. It's been great work, and it's been great having you.
Well, thank you for having me on, Jeff.
You bet. All right. Well, this is another example. We talk about this all the time. We've talked about K-12 education, a lack of accountability there, a system feeding itself. And you see that here with the VA healthcare system. And what transparency and choice in allowing citizens the freedom and the opportunity to go out and choose for themselves the healthcare that they want to provide. Or in the case of the K-12 issue, the education that they want to provide to themselves or to their children. It's revolutionary. It's the difference between a bad system and a good system. It's called the free market system and giving people that choice. And so thanks for listening to this show and to this episode and to all the great work for Concerned Veterans for America that they have done to help shine the light on this terrible tragedy 10 years ago, but then also to change and get us to at least the Mission Act. But there's much more work to be done. All right, liberty and freedom, they're easily taken for granted. Don't take it for granted. Go out and defend freedom. Defend liberty. Thanks for joining.
Thank you for listening to American Potential. You may listen to more stories from Americans working every day to expand freedom and opportunity in their communities by visiting AmericanPotential.com.